You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more. Today on our show, I'm talking with Tyler Stallings. Tyler, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Tyler, I want to talk about the project that you've been working on for a while. But to begin with, you're a writer and curator and have an artistic career and also a poet. Can you tell me a little bit about that background as it pertains to whatever you're going to tell us about next in terms of your project?
Sure. I mean, right now I'm interim executive director at University of California Riverside Arts Block, and that's a consortium of three museums, the California Museum of Photography, Sweeney Art Gallery, which focuses on contemporary art, and the Culver Center of the Arts, which is a performing arts venue. And I've been here for about 10 years, and before that I was chief curator at Lagoon Art Museum. But, you know, for me, writing has kind of always been at the core of all my activity, and part of that has been inspired a lot by films and science fiction films when I was a young kid. And, you know, I started writing movie scripts, doing little Super 8 films, and then that, you know, led into the visual arts, you know, as I kind of went into college. And I say all that because the big project that I am working on right now, and it's also doing it with two other curators, but I'm sort of the primary principal investigator on the grant, is a project called Mundos Alternos, Art and Science Fiction in the Americas. And this is one of many projects that is being supported by the Getty Foundation for an initiative called Pacific Standard Time, LA for Los Angeles, Latin America. And all the projects deal with Latino, Chicano, or Latin America in some respect. And one last note is that part of the inspiration for the project is not only my, you know, personal interest, but UC Riverside has the largest publicly accessible science fiction archive. So that was also part of the inspiration, along with being a Hispanic-serving institution designated in the United States.
Hmm. So tell me more about this project. How is it evolving, and how will it manifest itself?
Yeah, so this project is, something where we, you know, again, inspired by, you know, the science fiction collection here, is that we, for the award that was provided by the Pacific Standard Time, myself and two other curators, Joanna Shapinska-Myers, who's the curator at the Museum of Photography, and Rob Hernandez, who's in the English department, who focuses on Chicano art, we all three have been able sometimes to travel together, sometimes separately, throughout the United States to Mexico, to Puerto Rico, Cuba, Buenos Aires, Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. And the countries we went to were ones that have a history of science fiction publication and films. And so that was part of our inspiration for choosing those countries. But, you know, we've met with like over 400 over the past, during the research phase, we've met with like 400 artists, curators, gallerists, collectors, scholars, because this is really a burgeoning field that's even new within academia in the sense of really looking at the history of Latin American science fiction. And it's only really been, books have only been come about in the last 5 years or so, some small conferences. So it's truly, in the best sense of the word, you know, really cutting edge research. So for us, it'll be about an 8,000 square foot show that'll involve about 32 artists from all of those regions around the world. In the title of the show, you know, one of the issues with the kind of show is certain terminology. You know, the use of Latin American, Latino, any of these issues that deal with identity. And so for us, as we kind of went through the process, we really decided that in the title of our show, we wanted to call it In the Americas, because we wanted for one, the United States to be considered a Latin American country, and you know, within that concept. And so it's really what would be called a hemispheric approach, meaning that the United States and all of those countries are all connected, you know, as a constellation, and interconnected. And for a variety of reasons, it has to do with colonialism and all sorts of things. And this show, our take with the show, is really looking at science fiction, you know, kind of as a lens for social, cultural, and political, you know, critique. It's really looking at ways of looking at surveillance of labor, of post-colonization, and things like that. Because science fiction is about world building. Because when you're a writer or a filmmaker, you know, you're choosing the setting, you're choosing the language, you're choosing what the people look like, the economics. You're making all of those choices, so you're really representing how you would conceive of the future. And of course, science fiction is also an analogy for what's going on in the present at the same time too. So.
Right, and so, you know, maybe to talk about some of the conversations you had. I'm also kind of curious about what you said earlier. As a child, you were making Super 8 films and watching science fiction. What was the science fiction you were watching? Was that E.T. era or?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I, you know, for like a lot of people, you know, Star Wars was the thing, you know, that sort of blew my mind, you know, as a young kid. I was 12 years old when that came out. And, you know, it was the kind of thing where I had already been writing, doing a lot of poetry. And I think that when I saw that film and, you know, suddenly, you know, had access to a Super 8 camera, that's when I started writing, you know, scripts and, you know, shooting those scripts, you know, around the town where I was born. And this was in Louisville, Kentucky at the time. I'm kind of from the Southeast originally, but have been out here in Southern California since 1990. You know, that was just really, you know, captured my imagination. And I, you know, so it's kind of to this day, you know, you find people where that was, you know, such a significant game changer, you know, for them. If they were at that right age, you know, where they were on the cusp of figuring out who they were, you know, they understood about, you know, how to, you know, they were already beginning to think conceptually, you know, beginning to produce things, you know, so that was the beginning point.
And what's during your research now? I mean, you're traveling, and I never thought of science fiction quite that way before, but it's true. It's kind of reaching for sometimes an ideal society or you know, a kind of utopia. Is it, as you're surveying, and I, you know, I'm sorry to say, I don't know the history of Latin American science fiction. What would be a good example of that, or who are you talking to that, and how are they discussing it, I guess, is the question.
Well, yeah, no, that's a good question, because part of this is that, you know, especially in Latin American literature, there are examples that, you know, certainly like magical realism, you know, Borges, for example, there are different people where, you know, what would be sort of called having science fiction tendencies. And part of the scholarly research that's going on now is what's sort of called a retro-labeling, in the sense of going back and looking at some of this past literature that may not have been called science fiction, but now in retrospect can really see these science fiction tendencies. Now, in part of South America, some of the reasons in different periods of time why there was literature that focused on technological advancement is in part as South America was either coming out of colonialist roots, you know, I mean, coming out of its colonialist roots and was trying to, you know, present itself coming into its own. You know, one of the ways was to demonstrate, you know, its industrial know-how. And so, in a sense, the cultures, you know, you could say almost the cultural ministries, you know, for lack of a better phrase, you know, of these different countries, in a way, kind of encouraged you know, this kind of focus on technological advancement. And so in a way, that's why you might find a lot of literature having that science fictional tendency, that is using technology as a way to think about the future, but it was a way to suggest that these countries had also come into their own at the same time. So it was a way to kind of compete with the West, in a sense.
Right. In terms of technology or the aspiration for that technology.
Right. And then in the 70s, well, actually, I guess you could say into the 80s, 70s and 80s, a lot of these countries then had dictatorships. And science fiction then at that time was a way to talk around, you know, and to critique the dictatorships without addressing them, you know, specifically. That is, otherwise you could die. and then later, after the dictatorships, was a way to kind of analyze, you know, where the country was moving forward. So in a way, for a variety of different reasons, there was always this kind of utopic tendency, either technological aspirations, during a dictatorship, you know, what kind of society could we really be? Then after the dictatorship, what kind of society do we want to be moving forward? So you find in many of these countries sometimes that science fiction is much more utopic oriented rather than, say, a lot of Western science fiction, or I should say more in film, it tends to be very dystopic oriented sometimes.
Very interesting. And what, in terms of some of the discussions you're having now and all the research, what will be the cumulative product of all this? There'll be exhibitions and books or shows or film screenings?
So there'll be one big exhibition. There'll be one exhibition that'll open in September of 2017, so about a year from now. And then as will all the Pacific Standard Time exhibitions. There's about 40 of them, and they'll all be kind of opening around about the same time. And there'll be a big book, 180-page book, that'll be kind of a standalone reference book with 7 essays in it by different scholars in the field. And then there'll be, you know, a film program also that's still under development, but it's one of the people working on, she's not the curator, but one of our research advisors is named Cheryl Vent, who's a scholar in techno-futurism here at UC Riverside. Will be organizing a film program, kind of looking from, you know, films not familiar to most people that be coming from these different countries and the U.S. also, with the orientation that the exhibition has. So those will be some of the things that'll be on view all the way from September to February.
Well, it's exciting. It sounds like kind of a massive undertaking, right? This is an archive you're building, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been about a four-year undertaking. It really, by the time the show opens, it'll have been 4 years. I mean, from the research phase of all the travel, you know, to producing the book, selecting the artwork, and then putting it on. So, and then, like you said, yeah, I mean, we every time we met with artists, we did, voice recordings of the interviews with the potential of, you know, with the hope, sort of like you do, of having a dedicated website to the show, you know, where we can have, you know, edit these interviews into podcasts. So even if they're not in the show, that somehow their voice is being represented, because really, since it is such new research in the field in general, not just in the visual arts, but in, you know, academic research in general, you know, that it'll, provide an area that other scholars can come to, you know, to, you know, listen to these interviews.
That's really exciting. I'm glad we talked about, you know, this project today and focused on this. Is there anything else that you want to discuss about what's, I mean, I know you're consumed with this project now, and this is really everything you're doing. Or are there any other concurrent projects that you're working on? Any other writing?
Yeah, well, there's a, there's a project that I'm not organizing it, but I'm, sort of the director here. It's under my, kind of vision, but it's a project we're doing with Michael Lessie, who is based in the Northeast at Hampshire College, I believe, who focuses on literary journalism, and he's most famous for a book he did called Wisconsin Death Trip in the 70s. And he's we're doing a he's come to look at our at the Museum of Photography. We have the world's largest stereographic collection of about 400,000 glass plate negatives. And this archive goes back to late 19th century,
wow.
up to the 1950s. So we he got a big Guggenheim grant, and based on wanting to work with our collection, producing a book with W.W. Norton that'll be coming out next spring with the exhibition. And so he's taken about 300 of our images, focusing on the early 20th century, and has kind of written a alternative history of the United States, based on, these images. So that's a pretty cool show, and it's great, that we're going to have this book also through Norton coming out with it. And Michael Lessie is kind of just an amazing, sort of scholar in the field, and really was one of the early people to really push forward this idea of kind of, lyrical essays or the personal essay or the, creative nonfiction. Or as he calls it, literary journalism. And so it's really great to kind of work with somebody who's very early, very early in that field.
Yeah, that's interesting. That sounds exciting as well. It's I'm so glad we talked about this, and I really wish you great luck on that on the project. Would love to see the show when it opens.
Yeah.
Is there, before we go, I just wanted to ask, which is something I've been asking lately, is there any books you're reading now? It could be totally off topic, but
or on topic, but
anything you'd want to share with us?
Yeah, well, I'm actually reading a book called Leaving America, The New Expatriate Generation. And the reason I'm reading that is because I'm also working on a, kind of going back to sort of personal projects. With my partner, Nada Osline, I'm working on a documentary about expatriates in Mexico, American and U.S. expatriates in Mexico, and or they're also called Mexpatriates. And, sort of kind of coming out of this project on the Latin American science fiction, she and I really got interested in, and it was kind of through a residency initially that she did down there as an artist, this kind of counter-narrative to the American immigration story, and that it's this idea that there's really a lot of Americans who are leaving the United States in part, and that usually the narrative is that only immigrants would come to the United States as the land of opportunity. You know, you would never think that an American would want to leave the United States. You know, it's usually the narrative. But these are people who, when you talk to them, basically they can't afford to live in the United States anymore. There's no system here that supports them. There's no health system. You know, the economic just doesn't work for them. So they go to a place like Mexico where suddenly there's a system that supports them. There's a different culture which is oriented around family and friends. There's a slower pace of life. It's all of these things that I think we often say that we really want, but the United States really just doesn't provide, in the end. And so it's kind of fascinating when you then think about it as this sort of counter-narrative, to this idea of the immigration story.
I love that. I'll have to read that book as well. Tyler, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure getting to know about your projects and work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.